For the past 25 years, Jeff has been dedicated to popularizing the science of cymatics, which demonstrates through simple physics experiments how inert matter can be animated into lifelike flowing forms by the subtle invisible forces of vibration. The implications of these experiments are vast and have inspired profound insights into the invisible realms of nature in many who have seen them. These insights pertain not only to our world at large, but also, in deeply personal ways, to the hidden realms of human nature, which are often just as mysterious. In addition to being a producer and a publisher, Jeff is a poet, and his poetry springs forth from pondering how these universal principles of cause and effect that are demonstrated objectively in the realms of physics by cymatic play out subjectively in our personal lives. His work spans a wide range of topics, but always seeks to offer a wider perspective and inclusiveness that integrates the disparate in ways that only poetry can. As a producer, his 1993 documentary of Sound, Mind, and Body, Music and Vibrational Healing, won the Hartley Film Award through the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and its phenomenal success inspired him to produce the International Sound Colloquium, the premier conference exploring the power of sound, sacred sound, and music throughout the 1990s. He has distilled this wealth of experience into multimedia presentations and into feature articles, which have been published worldwide. His company, Macro Media Publishing, focuses on books and electronic media, which inspire and enlighten the discerning spiritual seeker. So we are very honored to have Jeff with us today. And I'm going to turn the mic over to you now, Jeff, and let you continue with your presentation. Welcome.
Thank you, Tina. Well, this is indeed a challenge to try to convey something that's primarily visual in an audio-only format, but I trust that many of you, most of you, if not all of you, have reviewed some of the material and have had a chance to see some of this beautiful dynamic artistry in motion. So the way I'm going to start off here is, well, maybe I'll just start off with, we live in a vast ocean of sound whose infinite waves ripple the shores of our awareness in myriad patterns of intricate design. Those are the first few lines from my DVD of Sound, Mind, and Body, Music and Vibrational Healing, which were penned quite a long time ago but are still quite relevant. The beauty of cymatics is that it portrays universal principles, and being universal, they're also eternal, and they're also applicable to any area of exploration, investigation, or inquiry. Yeni said that once one's eyes are truly open to the phenomena of cymatics, you can see it everywhere. I would imagine that all of you know Yeni. I'm referring to is Dr. Hans Yeni, a Swiss medical doctor and scientist who lived from 1904, and he died in 1972. He lived in Dornach, Switzerland, and he was very close to Rudolf Steiner. In fact, he was so close, he was a stone's throw across the street from the Goetheanum, the repository of Steiner's work. I'll be referring to Yeni throughout this presentation, as well as a few of the more contemporary researchers, of which there are quite a few now. Thanks to Yeni's work, they've got something to build on, let's put it that way. So let's start off with a brief history of cymatics, just assuming that people don't have the kind of background that, that I do, having studied it for many years. Cymatics could be defined as a study of wave phenomena and vibration, and this term was coined in the late 1950s by Swiss medical doctor and innovator Hans Yeni, that's spelled J-E-N-N-Y. And cymatics has been anglified to be with a C and a soft sound, cymatics. It's actually from the Greek, chematik, and in the Germanic languages, which Yenny spoke, it would have been spelled with a K. So if you hear Don Campbell, for instance, talk about chymatics, that's because he first saw the book back in the 70s, the original edition, and it was spelled with a K, chymatic, with a K at the front and a K at the back. And I found out in Greek it's actually pronounced chematik, chematik. And this term means something relating to waves, so wave phenomena, and that's why Yenny chose that term. Cymatics is really a specialization of the science of acoustic resonance. And this science really became much more well-known in the 1760s when Ben Franklin invented the glass harmonica. And the glass harmonica was a large precision musical instrument comprised of glass bowls of different sizes, gradually increasing sizes, mounted on an axle so that they'd all spin or rotate at once in unison. If you've ever wet your finger on a wine glass and gone around the rim, you'll know that you can get the glass into resonance. You can create a beautiful tone, a pitch, a very pure sine wave tone. Well, these bowls perform the same function. The instrument was based on the same principle. The axle spun these bowls all at once, so they were all mounted one next to another, but they were of gradually increasing size. And the performer would wet his fingers and touch the bowls and make music, very beautiful music. And in my presentations, my live presentations, I actually demonstrate what this sounds like. Very, very gorgeous. But again, it's the phenomena of acoustic resonance. Within a few years of Franklin's invention, another man brought the phenomena of acoustic resonance to the fore, and that was Ernst Friedrich Florenz Chladni. And I like to say that the study of acoustic resonance really began in Ernst, with Ernst Friedrich Florenz Chladni, known as the father of acoustics. And he was a German physicist. In the late 1700s, he vibrated glass and steel rods, similar to Franklin's harmonica. Glass harmonica, he used a bow instead, like a violin bow, and created beautiful tones and pitches using this phenomena of acoustic resonance. He was most well known for inventing a technique to show various modes of vibration in a steel plate. So what he did was, actually he used a glass plate first. He would bow the edge of a glass plate covered with sand, and when the plate started to resonate sufficiently, the sand would migrate into certain patterns. And it actually migrated into nodal regions, or regions of least vibration. And I'm going to go into a little bit of physics and acoustics here, because I think it's an important ground for you to have, an important foundation to understand what it is that cymatics represents, so that we can, well, actually what it is that cymatics demonstrates, so that we can further show what cymatics represents by implication and by extension. So he would bow these plates, and the sand, being heavy, dense material, would settle into the areas of the steel plate that had the least vibration. Now, nothing vibrates uniformly throughout. Everything's composed of molecules, atoms. They have space. They have different densities. And there is nothing that's uniform. So when you bow a steel plate or a glass bowl or a glass plate or even a crystal bowl, as you can do these days with the beautiful crystal bowls that have been produced, mass-produced, they resonate in certain areas more than other areas. And this can be visualized by putting a material that will respond to the vibrations on the surface. And that material will then settle in to these nodal points, or these areas of least vibration. Once they do so, they create a figure, and these figures actually on steel plates or glass plates have been come to be called Chladni figures, after Florenz Chladni. So you get coherent patterns. They're actually standing wave patterns that define the vibrational structure of steel plate. And it's actually the interaction between the vibration and the substance that's being vibrated, and that's both the plate, the substrate that's being vibrated, and the substance that's resting upon it, or the indicator. Now, if you viewed the little video clips on the YouTube that I have up there from my website, you'd have seen a demonstration by Christian Stutten, who was Hans Jenny's original assistant. He took most of the photographs in the cymatics books, and he assisted Jenny with his 14 years of experimentation in cymatics. So what you saw Stutten doing was sort of humming into a little plastic saxophone, essentially, with a latex membrane spread over what would have been the bell of the saxophone. No keys in this particular instrument, just an amplifier to amplify the sound of his voice and to channel it and focus it on this membrane that had sand spread on top of it. And you noticed a number of things. You noticed that with different pitches, he got different tones, and quite importantly, with a higher pitch, he got a more complex, more integrated tone. So these are all very important factors when you get into the science of cymatics and also into what it demonstrates. I'll just mention, I did mention that Jenny did 14 years of experimentation in this field. They were originally published in two volumes of Chymatic, Volume 1 and 2, which went out of print, and I reprinted them in 2001 into a single large hardcover edition, which is now in its third printing. And it's a very detailed book describing his 14 years of experiments and many of the implications of these experiments, and it's quite a fascinating book. It's the kind of thing that you could spend the rest of your life exploring and never get to the bottom of. So getting back to these experiments, the original experiments done by Chladni were done in the late 1700s, and in early 1800s, Napoleon actually offered a 3,000-franc prize to anyone who could write a mathematical explanation explaining how these amazing forms arose out seemingly magically out of bowing a glass plate with sand spread on it. And a young French woman, actually, Sophie Germain, won this prize, and 3,000 francs was a lot of money in those days. And it showed that obviously Napoleon valued this and thought highly of understanding why these phenomena took place. So Chladni was demonstrating these all over Europe, and there were certain phenomena that came to be recognized, and it had to do with the distribution of sand on the plate and how they created certain organic forms. Now, I'm going to jump way ahead. Hans Jenny did his work in the late 50s, primarily throughout the 60s, and he died in 1972. What Jenny was able to do was he was able to create a much more precise articulation of these phenomena. You know, when you bow a mechanical plate with a rosin bow, you're getting a lot of distortion there. You're not getting a good transfer of vibration into the plate. It's sort of hit and miss. And if you saw the clip of the fellow bowing the steel plate, you could see sometimes he got very coherent forms and beautiful tones, and sometimes he didn't. And if you viewed that clip a couple of times, you might have noticed that he was using his left hand to damp the intensity of the frequency so that all the sand wouldn't fly off the plate, and he'd get a really good, coherent form. This is similar to what happens when you mute the string on a guitar and get the harmonics out of it. It's a very similar phenomena. So what you can actually demonstrate is the scale of a particular steel plate, let's say, and each time you get a figure, that's one of the notes in the steel plate. Now, with Jenny, he actually used the phenomena of electroacoustics. So he pretty much created a phonograph in reverse. I would imagine that most of this audience is old enough to still remember what a phonograph is. Phonograph operates on the principle of piezoelectric. piezoelectric conductivity, where a diamond needle, the diamond is a piezoelectric material, where piezo, you provide pressure, you apply pressure to the diamond, and it generates an electric current, a flow of electrons. And this flow is precise. The flow is directly proportional to the amount of pressure that you apply to it. So if the tone arm is being tossed to side and side by the waves, the grooves, and the records, the stylus is modulating that and applying pressure to the piezoelectric crystal. The amplitude of the frequency of the tone, which is defined by the size of the wave in the groove of the record, is going to affect how loud the tone is, and the frequency of those little waves in the groove is going to determine the pitch. So Yeni was able to do the exact thing in reverse. He put an electric current into a piezoelectric crystal, a specifically designed crystal. Back in the 50s, these were very rare and very expensive. And this crystal would start to oscillate. It would bounce. It would actually move so extremely that if it were adhered to a steel plate, it could set the entire steel plate into harmonic resonance if you hit the right frequency. Again, it's a matter of finding the resonant frequency of the plate, which he did with a frequency generator. And then he just used a regular old stereo tube amplifier to amplify the sound, and he would hear what it sounded like through a speaker, but it was the plate itself that was resonating, very much like a string, like an acoustic string, when you can see the octave phenomena and the overtone phenomena. As you could see if you looked at harp strings in slow motion, you could see the oscillations creating the nodal points, which are the points of least resonance. And again, on a fretted string instrument, these nodal points are where the frets are. And on an open string instrument, you would have to mute them or touch them to determine or to get the effect that way. So again, this is essentially the scale of harmonics defined mathematically, geometrically, and acoustically through harmonic resonance, which is the way they were, well, that's what they are. That's what the scale is. That's what the harmonics are, is they are the logarithmic frequencies of resonance of a particular string, or in this case, a steel plate. So that's what Yeni was demonstrating. He was demonstrating how sound can be visualized, or I like to say he was able to make the invisible visible. And he did this extensively over the course of 14 years. He created a couple of films, which I have put onto a DVD called Cymatic Soundscapes, Bringing Matter to Life with Sound. And this had an hour of experiments showing some very fascinating phenomena, some three-dimensional phenomena, some phenomena of creating things that look a lot like science fiction, anti-gravity, force fields, these beautiful figure eight helixes migrating over the surfaces of the steel plate by just the resonance of the sound of the plate. It actually creates a flow form into a figure eight. Again, these were demonstrated in some of the clips that I hope you have seen. Yes.
Where can they get this information? Is it Macromedia?
If you wanted to see where these resources are available, you can go to my website, which is cymaticsource.com, and that's cymatic, C-Y-M-A-T-I-C, and then source, S-O-U-R-C-E.com. Or you can just search cymatics, and my site will come up. It's got the most info on cymatics. Thanks for asking that, Tina. Yeah, so as I said, Yeni was doing these experiments for many years. He had quite the background. He was a medical doctor. He was a Gatean scientist, which means that he focused on observation. So many scientists have ideas that they're trying to prove, assertions that they're trying to prove, and they disregard enormous amounts of data and select those little cherries that fit their theories. And, you know, there are contemporary New Age scientists who do this. One comes to mind, who I won't mention, who's popularized water phenomena greatly. But the science is not really that good. If you're cherry picking your results, it leaves a lot of question as to whether these are really valid results. Yeni used what is called phenomenology, which means that you repeat an experiment over and over again, you with only one a single variable each time you do it. And then after you've built up a body of evidence, you can start making multiple variables because you have a pretty good idea that if you do A, you're going to get B. And you see it over and over and over again. He also observed from nature. So he wasn't trying to deduce principles. He was actually inducing them. You could actually see the principle in action, again, with what Yeni said. Once one's eye was opened to the phenomena, the cymatic phenomena, you could observe it everywhere. Yeni saw this, well, let's call the cymatic phenomena pulsation or oscillation or a wave phenomena. Well, you could see it demonstrated in the micro scale through, say, embryology, the way an embryo develops over time and the way it goes through certain phases. So another way of looking at a wave is a phase. It comes in and out of phase repeatedly and regularly. So again, this phenomena can also be seen on the macro scale with the way that galaxies portray themselves in these beautiful spiral figures. The perfect oscillating spiral figure demonstrating the sacred geometric form of pi, Fibonacci, or the golden mean ratio. They're all slightly different, but they all have very similar forms. Yeni was an anthroposophist. He studied the teachings of Rudolf Steiner. He was also a painter and a musician and an animal lover. And he published this, well, actually it was published posthumously, but he painted hundreds of beautiful, beautiful paintings of animals, showing, again, this relationship of the animal being an integral part of the environment and almost being like a nodal figure coming to rise at certain harmonic overlays in the environment. And I'd like to go into this a little bit because I think this is really crucial to understand, that we live in a vibrational universe. Everything is in constant resonance. In my longer talks and presentations, I talk a lot about structure and dynamics as the two poles of the cymatic phenomena. Yeni called this the basic triadic phenomena. And the two poles are animated by vibration. So you get the dynamic effect or the flow form, and you get the structural effect or something that looks like a static form. But in reality, there is nothing that's static. Everything is constantly dynamic. It's always moving. And that is what gives music and sound its inroad into changing form, whether that is strictly physical form or whether it's a thought form or a feeling form or a condition that's taken residence in consciousness, like a type of illness or a physiological condition. It gives us an inroad in there because we have a chance to interact with modulations, with sensitive vibrations that are sensitized due to their energetic quality, but that they may want to, well, want is not, that's an anthropomorphization, but they may be able to be brought into coherency with just a slight adaptation of frequency, a slight modulation of frequency. It's almost like tuning a string. As you get the string really close, let's say you've got an instrument that has multiple strings, like a harp, that are tuned to the same note. When you're tuning a low note, you'll notice that all the other notes that are tuned to the same note, all the other strings that are tuned to the same note, will start to resonate with it. So this is the phenomena of sympathetic resonance and the phenomena of entrainment can also be demonstrated by cymatics. And again, this is really a little bit frustrating for me to have to be trying to expend all these words to explain something that could be so easily demonstrated with just a couple of illustrations. But that's the nature of, well, that's why Yeni did what he did. He made the invisible visible so that we could see the phenomena of sound. This is very important for a number of reasons, one of which is our sensory input. I would say, well, there's varying figures for this, but if you want to look at the amount of information that comes into our nervous system, comes into our senses through the ears, the proportion might be somewhere up in the 90% range when you take into effect the fact that the cochlea and the cochleal and the vestibular system are both receiving sound impulses. And the vestibular system is responsible for balance, for orientation in space, for a large degree of our sense of self and autonomy, actually, much more than we may be aware of. And, of course, the audible spectrum going in through the vestibular system. The cochlear system is responsible for our articulation of sound and our hearing. So while maybe not 90% goes into hearing, 90% comes in through the ear. And a large proportion of that goes directly into the subconscious. It is not processed the same way as the sensory input that comes in through the eye. 90% or around that percentage of cognitive information comes in through the eye. So you can see why Yeni might want to make the invisible visible. It would open up an entire new realm of understanding of making the unconscious phenomena a little bit more accessible to cognition. So again, making the invisible visible was very important to Yeni. This can be demonstrated, this predominance of the optical over the audible can be demonstrated in looking at the development of the embryo. The ear first develops in an embryo as undifferentiated epithelial tissue, skin tissue, on the side of the head, and it actually begins to work its way in, to spiral its way in to the brain very early on in the embryological development. So this continues to spiral inward, creating this inward arching spiral until it actually, the term is invaginates, and it is very interesting because it is a very feminine phenomenon. It is spiraling inward into what becomes the densest bone in the body. It starts out as cartilage, but as the embryo develops and the fetus develops and the baby develops, it becomes the petrous bone, which becomes the home of the cochlea, that beautiful little spiral that looks like a nautilus shell, nested securely in the densest bone of the body. So you have this inward, spiritual involution of formation, of form, of this golden spiral form, very much like the spiral galaxies that you see exteriorized. On the other hand, you have the optic nerve starts out on the front of the brainstem, and it extrudes itself out into the world, obviously much more masculine. It is forcing itself outward into the world, and it ends up being the eyes. So the optic nerve actually extrudes itself out to become the eyes. And this is a direct link into the brain, of course, as is the audible, but in a very different way. It goes into the cognitive centers much more directly so that we can cognize what we see around us much more than we can understand through sound. It's much more of a feeling phenomena that we access through sound. And that is why music, particularly, and certain audible frequencies can affect us in such a deep way because they bypass this cognitive filter and go directly into areas of the subconscious. Now, sound also affects us directly physically. That's why vibroacoustic phenomena are so powerful. And again, it can be a positive effect or it can be a detrimental effect, depending on, one, how it resonates with you, and two, how you respond to this resonance. You know, if you're resisting, let's say, a 60-cycle hum of your refrigerator, you might notice that after you're in that field for a while, your shoulders are up around your ears because it's just an inherently agitating frequency. It is not normal to the human body. So, again, as therapists, entering into a musical intervention or a musical attempt to reach someone, it's so important to find the resonant frequency, where the person is at, This is straight physics, but it's also the basis of relationship. If you're around a teenager, let's say, who's upset, and you go in there and you just try and calm them down, and you know, maybe you want to play some music, or you just try and meet them this way with a very calm and placating voice, it's not going to work. That kid's going to get more and more tense and more upset because you're not reaching them where they are. You may need to go in and say, okay, I get it. You're really upset right now. You're really angry. I can see that. And you know, I can get really angry too, but I don't want to get angry with you right now. I'd much rather, and you know, you begin to reason and to calm down. Your voice changes in timbre. It changes in rhythm. It changes in the element. You employ more of a water frequency instead of a fire frequency, and you can actually begin to modulate the situation very consciously using the principle of entrainment. And entrainment meaning a more coherent vibration will tend to draw a less coherent vibration into its field. And this is a really important principle that can be demonstrated very clearly with cymatics. And again, when you see them in motion through the DVDs, you know, through the phenomenon itself, if you're lucky enough to have the experiments demonstrated for you, you can really get this.